من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. So even though I might be going on a little bit of a fast pace to make sure that we cover as much material as we are able to and become acquainted with these different sects that on a historical level are relevant to us as Shia Muslims, and also on a theological level we need to understand where all of these divisions happened and why, and try to make sure that we're able to grasp onto the ideology of each of these sects in order for us to make some further evaluation on what it is that we believe in. In our structural belief, one way or another, we need to justify as to whether we are following the true path, as to whether we have made some kind of soul-searching journey to realize if the path that we are on is the path of Haqq. And so, in one stage in our lives, the younger, of course, the better, we need to go through this kind of research and investigation. Now, the more effort you put into it, the more you'll be able to come across what it is that each and every sect believe in, and also the more immune you will be in, God forbid, later on falling astray if one wave comes and hits you and takes you off the path. So the more you're able to invest in building a stronger foundation as far as your belief system is concerned, the more you'll be able to stay, or the stronger you'll be able to stay on the path. Last session we spoke about the Alawi sect, and we also spoke about the Ghulat. And we did mention that even though the Alawi sect, as far as the chronology of its formation, came about later on during the later Imams, but because it's relevant to Imam Ali alayhi salam, we mentioned it then and there. As for the Ghulat, or those who had some kind of extreme view towards the Masumin alayhim salam, that started off during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, peace be upon him. Now, we're trying to limit our discussion to Shia sects, and that's why we haven't really delved into the Khawarij. It's very, very important for all of us to know about the Khawarij sects and to understand how the Khawarij played a pivotal role in the deviation of many other sects after the Khawarij. So if we were to speak about a very strong, deep fitna that affected the Muslim Ummah at the time, other than the Shia-Sunni splits, was the coming about of the Khawarij. Because, as you know, they were mainly in line with Imam Ali alayhi salam, but then they split away from him. Now, that being said, we can see that during the time of Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, there was silence as far as different coming about of different sects or things like that. During the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, there were no forming of any sect, but it was after the martyrdom of Abi Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam where the turmoil started up again. Now, during the time of the fourth Imam, Imam Ali al-Sajjad alayhi salam, and the fifth Imam, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, after the realization that Imam Hussein was killed in an oppressed way, and people felt that they betrayed the Imam, many wanted to seek revenge many wanted to repent and do something in order for them to compensate them not standing with Imam Hussein. And that's where some uprisings and revolutions started to occur. The most outstanding of these revolutions was the revolution of Al-Mukhtar, the uprising of Al-Mukhtar. Now, his personality is very important for us to know, because when it comes to what we're going to be reading about and studying about in our first sect for this session, the personality of Al-Mukhtar is very important. That being said, there are two views as far as the appointing of the Imam. We said that Shias in general believe in the necessity of an Imam. Here there's a difference as to whether the Imam needs to be appointed by Nas. And Nas basically means appointed in person, verbally, by authority of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, or by authority of the previous Imam. Another view is not that it is appointed, the Imam is appointed by Nas, but by wasf. What does wasf mean? Description. So if the particular Imam, or if the particular person holds, carries these descriptions, these al-saf, then they are eligible to be the Imam. Now, of course, with the first sect that we're going to be speaking about, Al-Kaysaniya, even though it is extinct, but it's still relevant because it was the first sect that appeared after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. If there is a true reality to its very existence. And the reason why I say that is because it's very vague and ambiguous as far as the origins of this sect. And also, some scholars, like Sheikh Ja'far al-Subhani, says that it's highly doubtable that this sect even existed, and it was a made-up sect. You know that Bani Umayyah, the Umayyads and the Abbasids were at psychological war with the Imams, were in any way trying to bring down the authority of the Imams and also bring about a lot of confusion among the Shia. And that's why they created a lot of these small pocket groups, divide and conquer. They used a very sly, cunning tactic by spreading rumors and bringing, elevating an average person and bringing down another very important person for the sake of people not knowing who is who and what is what. Imam Ali alayhi salam, one of his sons, the wife Khawla bint Qais al-Hanafiyya, his name was Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya. He was one of the commanders of chief in Imam Ali's army. So he wasn't a normal average person, even though he was one of the many sons of Imam Ali alayhi salam, but he had a very important role in the Muslims at that time. And this group apparently appeared after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam by a few years, and they said that Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya was the Imam. Now, why are they called Al-Kaysaniya? One view is because the founder of this sect was one of the servants of Imam Ali by the name of Abu Umrah Al-Kaysan. A second view is one of the students of Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya. A third view is that he was either Al-Mukhtar, because Al-Mukhtar's nickname was Kaysan, or one of Mukhtar's commanders whose name was Al-Kaysan. Whatever the case may be, one important view is that even though they believed that Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya is the Mahdi, and apparently al-Mukhtar called people to follow Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya, who was the Imam and also the Mahdi, as far as our information is concerned, we reject both cases. We reject the claim that Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya assumed the status of imama or claimed to be an imam. We also reject the fact that al-Mukhtar invited people to believe in Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya as being the imam or being the Mahdi. One view that is mentioned that is also substantiated with a lot of evidence is that Al-Kaysaniyya, if we were to say that it truly existed, came about after the revolution and after the very life of Al-Mukhtar al-Thaqafi. And so if that was the case, how could we say that Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya invited people to himself? And also, how could we say that Al-Mukhtar was asking people to take Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya as the Imam or as the Mahdi? So, in this case, of course, there are different offshoots of Al-Kaysaniyya, and none of them exist, and they're all extinct. Okay, I emphasize on the point that if we were to accept the whole view that Al-Kaysaniyya did really have an external existence. And there are, as I mentioned, Sheikh Ja'far Subhani and another particular researcher in the area of Shia sects believe that it's a mythology. According to what our Shia historians say, they categorically reject that view. Whatever the case may be, we do believe, we do know that Al-Mukhtar was a noble person who stood in line with A'immatu Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, did not invite anyone to his cause of claiming of imama, nor did Al-Mukhtar ibn Ubaydullah ibn Ubayd al-Thaqafi. The important thing is that either this group appeared 6 years after Imam Hussein's martyrdom, or it appeared after the death of Al-Mukhtar. This is also the two views that exist. So there are three views as to who was the founder of Al-Furqa Al-Kaysaniyya. Number one is one of the mawlas of Imam Ali, and one of the servants of Imam Ali, by the name of Abu Umra Al-Kaysan. A second view is one of the students of Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya. A third view is one of the companions of Al-Mukhtar, or Al-Mukhtar himself. Okay? Now, with the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, again, there were people who felt the urge that they wanted to seek revenge and hunt down the people who perpetrated the atrocity of Karbala. One of these people was a shaheed, Zayd ibn Ali al-Sajjad alayhi salam. Shaheed Zayd, who is buried on the outskirts of Karbala and Najaf, is a very well-reputed, respected personality in Shia Islam. And a Shaheed Zayd led a revolution and was, to a certain extent, successful in his uprising in seeking revenge and making sure that the people who were responsible, or most of the people who were responsible for the tragedy of Karbala, were held accountable in this dunya. Zayd, of course, had two qualities. Quality number one was that he was from Ahlul Bayt, He was from the children, from the offspring of Fatima, alayhi salam. And quality number two was he rose with a sword. A group of people formed around that time who said, we will only submit to someone who has these two qualities. Number one, that they are from the children of Fatima, Hassan and Hussein, or Hussein, Fatima or Hassan or Hussein. And number two, that they rise with a sword. And this is where the Zaydi sect came into existence. And the Zaydi sect is important for us to know and learn about because it is considered to be one of the mainstream Shi'i sects, in the sense that it's not a Batini sect. It's not like the Alawis or the Ismailis or those who have come to extinction. But they are around nowadays, and they predominantly live in Yemen as well. Now let's read a little bit from the notes that I prepared. With Shaheed Zayd, and also later on his son, his elder son, whose name was Yahya, they rebelled against the tyrants, in particular revolting against Hisham ibn Abdul Malik, and of course he was later on crucified and martyred. So was there any claim from himself in Imama? Absolutely not. And that's why we honor him. That's why we respect him. And that's why we visit him as well when we're traveling to that region. But some of his four companions formed a group. And of course, there was one of the first of the Zaydi governments. There was one in Iran. There was in Egypt, and there was also in Yemen, which lasted the longest between the year 280 and after Hijrah and onwards. Now there are different Zaydi sects, and each of these sects and schisms and offshoots have different kind of belief. Some Zaydi sects reject the first two Khulafa. The first Khalifa was Abu Bakr, and the second Khalifa was Umar. And the third was Uthman. Now, some Zaydis acknowledged the Khilafah of the first two Khalifas, but rejected the third. Some Zaydis rejected even the first two Khalifas, and also went a step further and classified them as Kafirs as well. And so, they also... Most also don't believe in Nas. What did we say Nas was? The Imam is appointed by authority, but they believe that Imamah is by wasf, description. What was the description? We just mentioned that you need to be from the children of Fatima and rise with a sword. And that's why, if you want to look into the history of Zaydis, there are tens and tens of imams that they have. I was talking with a Zaydi Yemeni once, and he said there are even some Zaydis who believe that Imam Khomeini was one of the imams. Imamah is not divinely appointed, but by description, infallibility, isma, right? Isma is not a necessary condition. And as far as Al-Mahdi is concerned, they have a completely different, they have a different concept with Al-Mahdi. As far as their theology is concerned, even though they acknowledge Imam Ali, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, Imam Sajjad, but on a theological level, they are closer to the Mu'tazila Sunnis. On a jurisprudential and fiqhi level, they are closer to Sunnis as well. One example would be that they completely reject the concept of taqiyya. When did we speak about taqiyya?
Last
week. Thank you. Anyway, one of the here, if you look at the chart that I prepared for you, it speaks about al-Jarudiyya, al-Sulaymaniyya, al-Batriyya, and al-Salihiyya. Some say that Batriyya and Saliha, two names for one sect. But whatever the case may be, I've mentioned the people who were the founders of each of these sects and some of the main beliefs that they had that distinguished them from other Zaydi groups at the time. Okay? And it's good to read a little bit into these different sects and the other sects that are also around. Any questions before we go into the third sect? Now, is it correct for us to say that they are four imamis or five imamis? Answer is no, it's not correct. It's incorrect for us to say that they are four imamis or five imamis because they believe until Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam and after him Shaheed Zayd, because they don't limit the concept of imama to three or four or five, right?
We classify them as being part of the Shia sects, although in theology and in fiqh they're closer to Sunnism, and then accepting Imam Ali is not even on sound ground.
No, they do acknowledge, of course, the status of Imam Ali, and they believe that Imam Ali, and they believe in Imam Hussein as an imam, and Imam Hassan as an imam, and Imam Sajjad as an imam. They believe in them as imams.
Not as divine.
And that's why, yes, and that's why they are classified as Shia. Whoever believed in the imama of members of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam become classified theologically, become classified as Shia automatically. Whether it's Nas or whether it's Wasf. Yeah. Because even in this issue of Nas and Wasf, they have a difference of opinion as well. Okay? Even here, Al-Batriyya, for example, that's the best word that Yasir al-Habib likes using, Batris. They say that Imam Ali became Imam only when he became the Khalifa.
He was Imam before that.
Okay, and that's why the Batris, they have no problem with Abu Bakr and Umar and Uthman. They have no problem with that. How about the Houthi movement in Yemen now? Which of these theological sects do they fall under? The Houthi is not a theological religious movement. It's a political movement. So therefore, the Houthis, even according to what they say, there could be Zaydi Houthis, there could be non-Zaydi Houthis. And that's why when it does come to Zaydis, a lot of it is also tribal-based as well. Okay? The third sect and the last sect for today, we're coming down towards Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. And we need to be very passionately interested in learning about this particular sect, even though it's extinct today. But it gives us a moral insight into how easy it is for a person to deviate away from the path, to get lost, all because of hanging around with the wrong crowd. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, his first elder son, his name was Ismail. Not going to say anything about Ismail alayhi salam because we're going to be speaking about Ismailism next week. His second son, his name was Abdullah. And Abdullah had a flat feet broad or wide or flat feet, or a broad or wide or flat head. So whether he had broad feet or broad head, there's difference as far as what historians say. And that's why we say, الرأس أفتح الرأس أو أفتح القدمين. No one knows. أفتح is opposite to مقعر, which basically means curved. Now, why is this important for us to mention? Is because that was given, he was given that kind of nickname, title, Abdullah al-Aftah. And this particular sect that was formed is called Al-Fatahiyya sect. Now, that was his second son. Ismail died during the life of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam had issues with this son. You know, you get some son, some child needs to be like that rebellious person and needs to hang out with the wrong crowds and mix with bad friends and be influenced. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam continued to remind those around him that he was being influenced by the Murji'a, which was another deviant sect. And as much attempt as he made, there was, of course, always to no avail. Now, once Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam was martyred, transferred Imama over to the seventh Imam in the sequence of the 12 faith, who was Imam Musa al-Kadhim, whereas Abdullah al-Aftah said, seeing that I am the elder son, seeing that I am the elder living son, seeing that I have more influence, seeing that I have more access, I am the Imam. And a lot of people, even many of the close companions of Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam, started to believe in Abdullah al-Aftah. Sometimes you might hear someone say, well, you know, these people, they were very good and he was studying in the Hawza and has been a scholar for 40, 50, 60 years. And now all of a sudden you're calling him a deviant. Well, if it's happened to children of the Imams, then of course it could happen to anybody else. What's important is not a person's past, if they were doing something right at that time, wonderful, but how a person is at the time then and there. Shaytan, except for our infallible Imams, Shaytan will always find different ways of infiltrating into your heart. It could be through pride, it could be through wealth, it could be through rank and position, it could be through ego, it could be through many, many different ways. And there are many examples that we can mention. But the most important is for us to always remember that whether we like it or not, consciously or subconsciously, we are influenced by the people who we hang around with. Even if we were in the presence of the very Imam alayhi salam himself. And so, yes, Abdullah al-Aftah lived for a short period of time after the martyrdom of Imam Ja'far Sadiq, up to 70 days, but he created so much havoc at the time. Baytul Mal was at his disposal and he was given out freely. He was influencing other major figures in the time, like As-Sabati, who is one of the distinguished companions of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, and also a whole tribe by the name of Bani al-Faddal, who started to follow Abdullah al-Aftah, and they created the Fatahiyya sect. With the death of Abdullah al-Aftah, people came to realize that it was just a claim, and majority of people turned back to the true seventh Imam, who was Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam. Important thing here to also note is that we can't say that these people, all of them, are completely left the perimeters of Islam and they are disbelievers or anything like that, because the basis was a misconception. Now, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, having so many companions, and some of these companions became followers of the Fatahi sect. What about all of these ahadith that these outstanding companions narrated? In Ilm al-Rijal, which is the science of studying the biography of narrators of hadith, they say that when we come across a certain person, like someone from Bani al-Faddal, the Bani al-Faddal tribe, and they now have narrated from the imams, we need to distinguish, is this narration pre-Fatahi sect or post-Fatahi sect? We also need to have an understanding as to whether, even though he deviated from accepting the seventh Imam as Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam, as far as his quotation is concerned, as far as him narrating and transmitting information, can it be classified as reliable? Or because he fell into a misconception and was misguided, everything that he says is rejected. There's a principle that ulama al-rijal have mentioned based on a hadith that says, خُذُوا مَا رَوَوْا وَتْرُكُوا مَا رَأَوْا. Take what they have narrated and reject or abandon or leave what they believe. رُؤْيَة here means what they believe in. So there's a whole discussion as to whether Bani al-Faddal or anyone who accepted the Fatahi sect can still be classified as a reliable narrator. Is that clear with all the brothers and sisters, inshallah, this particular point? Now, where is the Fatahi sect today? Extincted then and there, during the time of the Imams. It lived for a very short period of time and it came into extinction. Why do we need to mention it? Because, as we said, there were companions from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam who narrated abundantly from Imam Sadiq that later on became Fatahis. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-Tahirin.